Hello, everyone. Welcome to Teen Connect on WDIY 88.1. I'm your host, Yashvi, and handling our audio editing is James. Teen Connect delves into local and global issues that are impacting young people in our community, with conversations that bring together experts and teens to discuss the problems and perspectives shaping our lives. Today, we have a special guest joining us, State Senator Nikhil Saval, the District 1 Senator for Philadelphia. Senator Saval has been a key advocate for policies like the Whole Homes Repair Programs, ensuring safe housing for families, and has worked to make Diwali an official holiday in Pennsylvania. We'll also explore urban development issues, including the proposed Center City Sixers Arena and its potential impact on Chinatown. So without further ado, welcome Senator Saval. How are you doing today?
Hi, Yashvi. Great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. So to start off, can you tell us about who you are and your background?
Sure. So again, it's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity. So I am the state senator for the first district representing Philadelphia. I represent the kind of heart of Philadelphia, Center City, South Philly, the River Wards, Philadelphia Airport, Packer Park. So like really the center of the city. And I am South Asian, actually the first South Asian elected to state office in Pennsylvania. And my family immigrated from India in 1970. Originally, I grew up in Los Angeles in Southern California, but have lived in Philadelphia for 13 years. And before being in office, I was a writer and magazine editor, as well as being involved in labor and community organizing.
So what inspired you to move into politics?
I had became interested in politics through the anti-war movement against the Iraq War, generally the war on terror in the early 2000s. Actually, my second or third week of college, September 11th took place, and soon thereafter, the United States was involved in two major invasions, which I opposed, that transformed my interest in, you know, made me get more and more interested in politics. I became a volunteer with the labor movement when I was in graduate school in California with Unite Here, which represents hospitality workers in the hotels, the stadiums, San Francisco Airport, and then the Philadelphia Airport here. And that was really transformative. It was the first time I was part of a multiracial working class coalition that could really build power and win things. And so it made me realize that organizing was a real way into politics. And I was also very transformed by the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2016, where I was made a pretty heavy volunteer. And that also felt like a real connection that I hadn't really seen before between social movement organizing and political office. Bernie Sanders was one of the first candidates for office in the United States. Arguably Barack Obama was another, you know, who had come out of social movements, had been and was really connected to them. And so I began organizing locally after the Sanders campaign to get people elected to office who were movement candidates. So we helped elect our local district attorney, Larry Krasner, to office, several state representatives, Elizabeth Fiedler, Joe Hohenstein, and city council people like the Working Families Party candidate, Kendra Brooks. And seeing that transformation, you know, got me more and more involved. I became a local Democratic ward leader and committee person. And finally, someone suggested to me that I should run for office. So I was really recruited. I don't know that I planned to run, you know, before that, but I was suggested to me and I wasn't horrified by the idea, I guess.
Awesome. So your parents immigrated from Bangalore, India, and opened a pizza restaurant where you spent much of your childhood. How did your family's immigrant story and experience as a small business owners shape your perspective on workers' rights and your path into politics?
Yeah, it shaped it hugely. You know, I would say that my parents, so, you know, they came with science backgrounds, but then when I was growing up from, you know, basically since I was born to the time I left California to go to college in 2001, they owned this pizza restaurant, which was a deep dish franchise in Southern California. And principally, you know, on the one hand, I realized how I live the life that so many immigrants and children of immigrants live, which is just spending so much time in your parents' local business and learning the ups and downs of small businesses, you know, when business is good, you like the just general vibes are good. When business is slow, you start to feel anxious because that it's sort of a lot of things feel sort of in and out of your control. And I realized what a kind of, you know, tight rope so many people walk, managing these businesses, taking care of their families. And the workers at the restaurant were all across the immigration spectrum and citizenship spectrum. And they, many of them came from Latin America. Many of them in some ways were refugees or rather were seeking a different life, I should say, from US-backed wars and, you know, Central America and things like that. And my parents really worked to help them achieve status and, you know, stable immigration status in the United States. And my parents always taught me that it was really important to recognize our own stories in their stories and to see that, you know, people who came to the US, no matter where they came from, were like us seeking a foothold in this country, and we should have solidarity with them. And that was hugely important to me. I mean, I think it was probably, you know, solidarity, I think, is one of the keywords of the work that I do and just the what I see as important to as an ethos for building political power. And I'd say that without really knowing it at the time, this was the first lesson. These were the first lessons I received in it, was growing up in that restaurant.
Moving on, how did your career and as a writer and editor at a magazine influence your legislative priorities, especially regarding housing and labor rights?
So I was a magazine editor for a literary and political magazine called N Plus One, which is based in New York City. And I also wrote on housing architecture and design for a number of magazines, but principally the New York Times and the New Yorker. And, you know, on the one hand, being an editor got me interested in so many different topics that, you know, by nature of not actually writing those pieces, I wasn't an expert in. I wasn't, you know, I could just explore so many different topics. And I, without really realizing it, it sort of prepared me for politics in the sense that when you're an editor, you get pieces from people who, you know, are trying to say really important things and do their best and just, you know, express themselves in the best and more and truest possible way. And in order to help them do that, you sometimes have to become expert or quasi-expert in their subjects. So you find yourself like learning so much and, you know, trying to find the best people to write about particular subjects. That's sort of what politics is as well, is that when you're trying to draft a piece of legislation, you need to find stakeholders who care very deeply about a particular issue so they can tell you whether the piece of legislation is good or bad or whether it, you know, needs work or, you know, things like that. There's a certain kind of relationship between editing and lawmaking in that way, which I didn't, of course, realize at the time. And then the other thing about writing is that it kind of encourages a what I would call professional dilettantism, which is sort of what politics is like too. Obviously, certain politicians are experts in particular subjects, but they don't, you know, fundamentally, you're interested in everything because you're interested in society. You're interested in just in making society better and making the world a more livable place. And so that requires being interested in everything. And so writing allowed me to explore so many different subjects. I will say that I did focus ultimately on sort of housing, urban planning, design. It just became something that I wanted to sort of specialize in. And writing about those subjects made me realize that there was a world of ideas to explore and policy too that could be enacted. And so when I was running for office, you know, I really wanted to put that policy that I explored and kind of ideas that I explored historically and otherwise in my writing into action. And that's still my interest. I still want to bring that kind of intellectual sphere into politics and into people's lives.
So one of your major victories is the Whole Homes Repairs Program, which provides funding for home repairs and creates sustainable jobs. Can you share the impact this program has on Pennsylvania's housing market and the workforce?
Thank you. Yeah, we are very proud of the Whole Home Repairs Program. It is, you know, I passed it in 2022, and it is, just to be, you know, to explain what it does, it's a program that really helps people stay in their homes. We have a very old housing stock in Pennsylvania. Actually, Pennsylvania has some of the oldest homes in the country. And It has a lot of low-income homeowners and low-income tenants as well, who deal with major issues in older homes. That could be a leaky roof, the lack of adequate heat or cooling, really high utility bills, mold, unremediated lead, just major structural issues with a home. You know, also these homes were, many of them were built many years ago and were not built to withstand the climate crisis that we are going through. So, you know, all of these things combined to make it sometimes impossible for people to afford to make needed repairs and stay in their homes. And if you lose those homes, we sometimes lose people. We lose stability in our communities. And so I thought it was important to be able to provide supports for people to be able to stay in their homes, pass them on to future generations, you know, to reduce energy burdens, to make it easier for people to adapt their homes in case they have a changing physical need or disability. And so the Whole Home Repairs Program provides grant funding for people to make these kinds of needed repairs. It provides monies for counties to be able to help people walk through all the programs, housing assistance that they are eligible for. And it provides job training. So it helps people get into the jobs that will do home repairs in the near future. And at this point, over 2,600 homes have been repaired across Pennsylvania, which means these are homes that we would have lost. We would have lost, people would have lost those homes. We would have lost them in Pennsylvania. Let's just be clear about them. And hundreds of people are going through job training programs. Well, we'll see that effect, you know, in a few years, where people will come out of job training programs and then go back to their communities to do home repairs. And we've also seen this program get adopted in other states. Maryland has a whole home repairs program. Maine and Massachusetts are exploring creating a whole home repairs program. The federal government, our senator in Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, and his Republican colleague, Cynthia Lummis in Wyoming, have introduced a national whole home repairs program. It's become a major idea across the country.
Well, thank you so much for engaging in such conversations so far. You're listening to Teen Connect here on WDIY with our guest, Senator Saval. We're going to take a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Teen Connect. Today, we're talking with State Senator Nikhil Saval. So, with the ongoing controversy surrounding the proposed Sixers Arena and its potential impact on Chinatown, how do you balance the economic benefits of such developments with the concerns of displacement and cultural preservation raised by the local community?
This is a great question. So the, you know, I oppose the creation of or the building of the 76ers arena adjacent to Chinatown. Every kind of study of the project, you know, multiple different stakeholder groups, especially design and planning advocates, and of course the community in and around Chinatown, have raised concerns that the arena will likely destroy the neighborhood. And with not sufficient, I would say, economic benefit to mitigate many of the concerns that people have. You know, I will say that we really do need economic development in the heart of Center City. I represent that entire area, Chinatown, all of Center City, Market Street, running from the Schuylkill River to the Delaware River. You know, I represent the historic district. I represent the neighborhood, Washington Square West. So I'm very concerned and familiar with the issues in those neighborhoods. I've heard from the constituents and the local institutions. Overwhelmingly, the sense is we need development in that area, and development could be done in concert with the community and with benefit to the community. But the Sixers Arena, for in sheer planning and design terms, and also in terms of the detriment that it poses to Chinatown and the surrounding neighborhoods, is not the right proposal for that neighborhood. And, you know, it's telling that the so-called community benefits agreement that was negotiated with the 76ers to support and mitigate the effects on Chinatown was not negotiated with any partners in Chinatown. It was not negotiated with any partners in the surrounding neighborhoods. It was only kind of produced with the support of the team. So it has no input from the community. It can hardly be called a community benefits agreement. You know, this is a textbook way not to balance the concerns of the community with the project as it's been proposed. I think we are at a point where we should really consider whether this is the direction that the city should go in. And I urge my colleagues in city council to consider the effects and the sheer unpopularity of this project and what this might do to the heart of our city. I will also say that many of the reasons to support the arena are to transfer the benefits and economic benefits to neglected and disinvested neighborhoods in our city, especially Black and Brown neighborhoods. And I think that's completely meritorious. I totally agree that we need development to support not just the area where it happens, but all of our city and to create jobs and things like that. And we need a really strong Black and Brown economic agenda for our city. I just believe very strongly that the 76ers arena is not that. And not only is it not that agenda, it will destroy the last working class community of color in Center City. And not only do I believe this, the city's own studies of the project say it in very plain terms. And so for those reasons, I'm strongly in opposition to this project.
And earlier this year, Pennsylvania officially recognized Diwali as a public holiday. Could you share more about the cultural significance of this achievement and how it reflects the broader inclusivity efforts in the state?
Yeah, thank you. I was proud to support the legislation. And I'm a Indian American, South Asian, Hindu American. Diwali is, of course, celebrated not just by Hindus, but many other people, Sikhs, Jains, Buddhists. It's become a kind of global holiday, not just in South Asia, but it's a national holiday in Trinidad. It's celebrated where, wherever there are kind of South Asian diaspora, which is, all over the world, really. And it is a holiday about the triumph fundamentally of light over darkness. And if you've ever celebrated it, in like I've celebrated it in India, it's an extremely fun holiday. It involves fireworks and, et cetera, delicious food. And so it's a very welcoming holiday, not just for South Asians, but for other people to kind of invite themselves into global traditions from the subcontinent of South Asia. And to that end, I think it's a recognition of the growing presence of the South Asian diaspora in Pennsylvania. But also I hope it is part of an overall, sense that we should recognize the diversity of traditions that we have in our Commonwealth, that we have what I would call a kind of diverse antiquity, that like our history now, the history of the people in Pennsylvania doesn't just go back to the founding of this country or to Western Europe. It goes back to so many different global traditions. I know that there's been an effort, which I hugely support, to recognize Eid al-Fitr, the traditional fast breaking that takes place at the end of Ramadan for Muslims around the world. And I think we should also be passing legislation like that, and allowing people to recognize their traditions, and for people who are not conversant in those traditions to become aware of them. Because, that's part of the way that people, come to terms and come to love the diversity of our Commonwealth and frankly our country. And, I will say, when we have fairly divisive rhetoric around immigration, around refugees and asylum policies in the United States, these are ways that we can recognize the sheer positive nature of growing the number of traditions that we have in our Commonwealth and in our country.
What advice would you give to young people interested in politics who want to make a meaningful impact in their communities?
So the one thing I would say is that I would really recommend that people who are interested in politics do some volunteering on a political campaign or in an organizing drive. it's really great. So frankly, to knock to canvas and knock on doors of your neighbors or for a campaign is one of the best entryways to politics, in part because it gets you to talk to strangers. And you get out and you knock on doors and you have to find out what people care about, what they're interested in. And it helps you to learn how to talk to other people about your own interests and what matters to you in politics. And this is the kind of conversation that is essential to our civic fabric, to building a stronger democracy, is being able to have that conversation across, you know, potentially across political lines, but certainly just across different ways of being, different subjectivities. And that's what I think politics fundamentally is. And so I would really recommend volunteering on a campaign. But overall, my general advice is to get organized and to become part of an organization. Find an issue that you particularly care about. And if you care about it, there's likely an organization that sort of speaks to that issue or works on it. And you might want to volunteer with that organization. There may be like a particular piece of legislation or even just a neighborhood or, you know, issue in your municipality or town that you can fight for. Maybe you want to fight for ensuring clean water in your neighborhood and ensure that, you know, I know that it's not endangered by a natural gas facility, or, you know, that's something that happens across Pennsylvania. Maybe you want to fight for more funding for your public school. Maybe you want to fight for, you know, traffic safety in your neighborhood. These are ways that people can get involved and learn, you know, the kind of fundamental conflicts and issues and motivations in politics. So, but you can only really do that with other people. There's no way that anything gets done in politics without collective effort. So that's, you know, that's what I've learned through volunteering with the labor movement, volunteering on political campaigns, and then ultimately building my own organization, a progressive organization, to fight for the issues that we care about. So volunteering on campaigns and getting organized, those are the ways that we can win the things that we care about.
Well, thank you for your insights. You've been recognized as Elected Official of the Year, Champion for Affordable Housing, and even named on Philadelphia's 100 Most Influential People list. How do these achievements motivate you to continue your work?
I mean, of course, I'm proud of them, and I sometimes feel a little sheepish about it. It's like, but I will say that, you know, the kind of recognitions that come from community development organizations or group people working on housing, those are the ones that are really meaningful to me because that's work that we've done together. It's not like I got some kind of recognition, I remember, from a group that works for people with disabilities and assisted living and things like that because of the Whole Home Repairs Program. But it was an organization that I had worked with to kind of develop the program itself. So I don't really see it as like a recognition of me or what I've done. I think see it as a recognition of our work together. And so, you know, in that sense, it motivates me to work to build community and coalitions, you know, stronger coalitions together, because I can't do it by myself. I still feel sort of uncomfortable as a politician and having my name everywhere, because it's not true, right? It's not true that I'm doing all this stuff by myself or I have some special capacity. I don't. It's just, I'm just a vehicle for these things. You know, and that's it, you know, and like, so yeah, anytime a recognition like this comes, I recognize it, or I see it as a recognition of collective effort. I want to always think of it that way and always sort of feel uncomfortable, honestly, having it attached to my name in any particular way, because I know it's not me. I know it's about us.
Moving on to our last question. If you could give your younger self any advice, knowing where you are today, what would it be?
Wow. I guess I would say to be easy on yourself. When I was younger, I was so concerned about going to the right schools and getting the right, you know, doing well in particular tests. And I was really interested in, you know, what we would call the meritocracy, right? The idea that like, if you do all the right things and you work hard, that like, you know, your particular abilities or talents will take you to the right places. And, you know, honestly, I don't I don't believe in that system anymore. I don't believe in this system in which people are just like competing with each other for scarce goods. I believe in a system in which everyone has what they need to thrive. For, you know, there's a for saying that comes from Karl Marx, from each according to his abilities, to each according to their needs. And that's the slogan of just having a society that is, you know, in which everyone has what they need to thrive. That's what matters. And when you yourself are like constantly in this competitive spirit of trying to make it, you're not thinking of that overall system. And it can be psychologically hard. And I think a lot of young people probably go through that, right? Because especially when you're in high school or something and people are talking to you about college or the next step or what have you, it can really be really hard on people. And I'd say that it was kind of hard. It was hard for me. And like now I feel more at home with the idea that the solution isn't just through individual people pursuing their interests. It's through collective activity to make our society better. And that means that I can be disciplined and real and sober about stuff and take you. It doesn't mean that you don't take criticism and you don't, you know, better yourself, but it's on behalf of a societal goal and not a personal goal, if that makes sense.
Thank you so much, Senator Saval, for sharing your experiences and insights with us. We look forward to seeing all the incredible things you'll continue to achieve for the community. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Teen Connect. Stay informed, stay empowered, and remember that your actions can indeed make an impact. Until next time, I'm Yashvi. Have a great day.